Hi, and welcome to the Property Mom Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Timmy Phillips, and this is part of the Black History Month series that we're running this month of October. And this is really to celebrate all the women and some men who are doing interesting things in property. So one of the reasons why I found Timmy's business model quite interesting is because of the different slant it has that specializes in luxury and vacation home apartments. But in addition, she works with quite a lot of corporates and high net worth individuals to manage their properties either while they're overseas or while they have their tenants or their guests at the property. So in a way, she's built up a concierge services company, which obviously provides the usual tickets, travel and all of that. But in addition, manages the property and provides an additional source of income and income stream in her business. So today we'll be discussing about how she got into that. She calls herself the reluctant entrepreneur, but she's done really well and built it up to where it is now. So listen in and you get quite a lot of good insights because she really thinks through her processes, through her structure, thinks through her systems, and overall brings a breath of fresh air into the way she runs her business. Listen in, really, really good topics we covered. Welcome to me.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. First time ever.
Oh, really? Don't worry, yeah. You're in for a great time. So I'm really looking forward to knowing more about your journey. And just to give some context before we find out a bit about you, having been in property for the past 10 years, I kind of had worked out all these different routes to get into property. So you don't necessarily have to have that big deposit to start out.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can start a business within property services, agency, and whatever. And one of the strategies was to create a concierge services company. And you were my inspiration for that because I know you had started way back, you know, back in how long?
12 years now.
12 wow, years exactly. In wow. So 12 years ago, you started your own business in that space. So can you tell us a bit about your journey and how you came about that idea?
Well, it wasn't really planned. It was more of a conspiracy, what I call a divine conspiracy, where I have other plans, then God has a different plan, and then those two plans clashes. So I was quite happy working as a project manager in the city. And then, unfortunately, I got laid off because the company got bought over. And then, because I only started working there 10 months before that, it was kind of last in, first out, that kind of thing. And along that time, a friend of mine suggested doing something along the lines of, it wasn't really concierge because I always organized stuff and I knew, it's just new random things. Mm-hmm. She's always started a business that, you know, around what you do as a hobby on the side. And I thought, what the heck are you talking about? I'm quite happy working 9 to 5, you know, Monday to Friday. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I don't care about anything else. But then got laid off and then I was then put in for a competition, which I didn't really plan for. I started to go ahead and ask a friend who is always almost busy, you know, and for the first time she was actually available. So she helped me to get my presentation, which I wasn't very happy about. And then I went for the
presentation about, sorry.
It was like a Dragon's Den type thing. It was organized by a group called Ignite or something. Okay. So they had all sorts of, other people like accounting company, people to help you set up a business and talk to your business idea. So I went in that day, having only spent like maybe 30 minutes to an hour prepping for the kind of Dragon's Den presentation. So I got there, not really even dressed properly as far as the judges were concerned. So the idea then was just virtual concierge, you know, people that are coming in for holidays from all over the world, you know, they're coming in, they've only got their hair for a short period of time, how can you maximize their stay? And that was my presentation. And then to my, I wouldn't say I was happy to hear I came second, but I came second and I was so upset.
Oh, you didn't want to. You're really an accidental business
owner. I was dragged into this kicking and screaming. So I got the check. I asked the accountant, like, give me the check. Can I use the check to buy a pair of shoes? And she looked at me like, seriously? And I was like, oh, you didn't. So I had to sit down there and figure out a name for the company. And like, that's how I started. So the idea was really around, you know, people coming in, for either permanently or for a short period of time, short period of time being a couple of nights to a few weeks, months. And typically they'll be coming for holiday, for business, for medical reasons, or they've got kids about to study in the UK and they'll need help while they're around, or help before they arrive and when they're around and when they've left. Yeah. So that was the whole premise of the business.
Okay. And so that was the original concept, but I'm sure across the years, you've sort of started to evolve. You know how it is when you're in one business, you think when you go in, it's going to be in this direction. And then you find that other doors open. Did you find that to be the case?
Definitely, definitely. So one of the key things about having people that are coming in, the first thing they need is a place to stay. Mm-hmm. So they're either looking to buy, looking to rent, looking to stay. And our idea was we would be the ones that would source the property for them. So it would be the property finder, kind of a place to buy, to rent, or for a short term. But then we had one client say, oh, but property, I have property in London, it's always empty, or can't you help us let it? And I was like, no, we don't do that. Quite, thank you very much. And then somebody else, and I thought, okay, not again, like, this is on that conspiracy, right? And a friend said, it would be a good idea. And I thought, who the heck are you? Anyway, so yeah, so somehow, again, kicking and screaming, I found myself taking on properties. And then that became, funny enough, like, most of our revenue was like, maybe 60-70% of it came from that.
But
yeah, so suddenly we had clients that would say, well, I've got a property, I come in half term sometimes or not at all, rather than have it sit there doing nothing, can you rent it out for me? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we will have guests saying that for and say, oh, is this yours? And they were like, no, it's not ours, actually, it's a client. Says, oh, they'll be interested in buying their property too and having someone look after it. And then we then started having clients that way. And then we had those clients that said, no, not interested in having it less at all. I just want you to go in once, twice a month, check it out, make sure the place is fine, and so on. So then it was a case where we had properties on our list that were up for short let, and some that weren't. Some that were kind of half and half lived in, and some that were hardly lived in.
Like a portfolio of all these different properties in which we had different uses.
Exactly.
But ultimately, they're all bringing in income, which is
So
it's the multiple sources of income within property, but it's still, you know, you're generating income from all these different sources.
Exactly. I mean, the challenge sometimes with those that were half and half lived in, or with clients that weren't in it for the money, was you know, being able to rent it as and when you get inquiries. With some clients, you had to first check with them, have you got anything planned, and then by the time they get back, the guests might have said it, well, we want something else. So that was a bit of a challenge, but at the same time, that meant there wasn't as much pressure
to fill those properties.
Exactly,
those types of landlords that don't necessarily care that their properties are let.
Exactly.
I just want to have somewhere base that I come to. So it's a nice to have, but
they're
not in, you know, in any incentive, they're not incentivized to
work. So that was good and bad sometimes, but I guess having that mixture was a relief in times where, for whatever reason, because around the time when I started, so we had the volcanic ash, and suddenly we had bookings that had to be cancelled. It was just the first year, and I thought this could not be the worst time for this to happen. And a few other things, even when they're in the tourist attack, we're worried that people would not travel as much as well, and stuff like that. So it was kind of good to have properties that we didn't necessarily feel the pressure to fill, and then to have those properties that weren't off for less at all, which means we were still getting
the recurring income. Exactly. Okay, so that's an interesting strategy. So you created sort of like a property management, a set fee, or is it?
Yeah, so it's a set fee and a different level. So we had two levels. So we had the home concierge and then the home concierge plus. The home concierge typically work for people that lived in the UK, but maybe traveled a lot. But then you have those that don't live in the UK and they don't want to have their house empty. And funny enough, that actually happened. You know, as much as we had some clients, we kind of stumbled on this through a client that became a client because his flat had there was a flood for someone's flat above him. But because his house was empty for so long, he didn't find out until it was too late, and his insurance wouldn't cover it because the house was empty for more than 28 days or something.
The insurance policies require that the properties are occupied.
Exactly, because if it's not, then if anything happens, they'll kind of put it under negligence that had you been in the flat than you do.
So it would have made sense for him to have been paying for whatever
exactly
monthly to make sure somebody's going in there to check the property.
Exactly. Because the only way he found out was through, because the leak went through his flat and it went to the flat below. So not only did he have to pay for his for the refurbishment for his flat, he also had to pay for the one below. And then there were so many other things. So the house was damp and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And again, this
bad idea for people with properties here that they just kind of leave abandoned. Like, it's better for there to at least be that ongoing management.
Exactly.
And, in a way, it's almost a protection. It's like an insurance.
It is a protection, Because this client, again, and initially, like I said, we had clients that had that, that owned properties, that had properties that didn't ask us to look after it. And we weren't really pursuing it until this client came along and we thought, oh, this is a market for this. There is actually a value to having someone go in once or twice a month to check things out. And that's when we started pushing that for two reasons, because, you know, first of all, they're on a retainership. That means there is that they pay that fixed amount and then for any added services, then we charge them. But that meant we could then really push the whole having, because as a business, you want to have a healthy cash flow.
Yes.
And with short term, with renting short term, you've got highs and lows. You've got the peak season, the low seasons. And then God forbid that something happens where maybe when you're expecting the summer to be a really busy one, then it's not. And then any plans you've got to change. And it was a bit frustrating after a few years. So then having this one, which meant that we weren't making as much, but there was consistency.
Yes.
Suddenly we could plan. Suddenly there was, we weren't in survival mode every time.
To scale, it's so much. Exactly. So I've always said that. I think that it's, you know, if you're in that sort of service accommodation or that space, that always makes sense to at the same time be developing a longer term strategy as alongside. And I think in my case is one of the few regrets that I have that I didn't pursue that side of the business.
Right.
Earlier because, I was going more the rent to rent, had all of the income. And even if the season was low, you could still compensate by charging much lower prices. I wasn't asking the landlord if they would accept a lower amount or not. Yeah. I just would reduce the prices. I'll get the income in and at least it will sort me out during the low seasons once the high season sort of comes back. But if along the years, imagine 10 years of steadily acquiring all these, you know, properties here, how many properties would one have acquired over the years, you know, even if you weren't even actively chasing it, right?
Definitely. It was worth having that diversity.
Yes.
Without necessarily going off and doing something that it wasn't really
supposed to be. Exactly. Because we used to the turnover of having to take care of people in their properties anyway.
Yeah.
So having these longer term properties on your books is not that much of a stretch to your business.
No, not at all.
Yes. So, of course, we have to now talk about COVID and the impact, because you are definitely one of the people that would have been impacted, as I was, during this season. So, how have you coped, you know, dealing with COVID in your business?
So, I'll have to backtrack a bit. So, one of the things that we did about two years ago was to start to build a reserve. So, and the idea was if we earned 100%, we had to put aside at least 10% to 20% every month in order for us to build about 3 to 6 months worth of our outgoings.
Wow, well done. Okay.
So then that's another reason why we really started pushing the home concierge thing, because that's the only thing where we could consistently maintain that as opposed to that fluctuation. So that helped us when COVID came across, we could kind of forecast and say, okay, if we were going to keep going, how long could we go without any income coming in?
Okay.
And again, that meant we didn't go straight into survival mode. We could think and breathe.
Oh, wow.
So when this happened, obviously it was like panic at first, because this is our busiest season. Because alongside properties, we book for events, you know, shopping, parents are coming and out. So this is like the peak of all our service.
So what does the concierge service actually cover in terms of scope?
Right. So apart from properties, which is where everything starts, you know, most events, this is where it's global, you know, around that March, we'll be doing Cannes Festival, getting tickets to Royal Ascot, the Grand Prix Monaco, you'll have I can't remember what the dates are, and you know, with different events going across over the world, from sport to red carpet to fashion shows to all of that. And then you would then have the booking for the holiday seasons. And then we also had a corporate account, and they would have more clients coming in. And because we, even though they paid a retainership, every time they sent a client, we were paid per client per night as well. So that was like the peak season we were looking forward to, because this year was going to be amazing. and then COVID happened. And because all our clients are non-UK residents coming in for holiday business pressure and all that.
Lockdown.
No events. All the events were being cancelled. So we were processing refunds, trying to find out from insurance what we could refund and all of that, how long it would take. And so at first we went into a bit of a, knowing we still had a reserve, it was still a panic mode to some extent in terms of figuring out what our suppliers, how they could refund, if there's going to get a refund, what was COVID, what did it actually mean? Was it going to be a 2-week thing, a 4-week thing, a 12-week shutdown? What does that look like? But then after that, we just kind of, I also had some personal thing I had to deal with. It just took time to breathe and think. And as sometimes I found a panic, like, oh my God, this breathing and thinking thing is going to
be. Breathing and thinking.
But in a way, I feel like now I've got time to not just jump first and look for the rocks later. I can plan and I can think. So the home concept is still on, because now it's just saying the same thing but in a different way. So now people that would are doing that, have properties that never wanted to let in the first place, are our primary target right now.
Yes.
Because suddenly they may not come that often, but they still need to have their home looked after. Mm-hmm. If they're coming in, you know, obviously there was a 14-day self-isolation you had to do. I'm not even sure if you're still on right now.
Yes.
But if you come in for the first 14 days, you don't go out and all that. So as part of the service, we would make sure the house was had Please a deep stop. Antiviral, deep clean, and then stock the house with food and whatnot. And just help them to figure out what was open, what wasn't opened, and just be that the hand-holding service throughout. So they would obviously pay for the retainership for the home concierge every month.
Yeah.
And then we would then, you know, for any extras, we would then charge that way. So yeah, so we're now pushing for that and then just looking for opportunities, trying to figure out what that looks like. Where do we find those clients?
I'm going to ask, so like, how do you, so because it feels like this is quite a specialized type of market that you're in, so how do you even go about sourcing clients and, you know, building that side of the business? Or have you just kind of relied on word of mouth and people knowing?
You just you know, conversations. There'll be some that you would, I kind of thought, okay, if I was a client, where would my journey start? Where's the best place to find this kind of client? There wasn't any one way. So I started talking, talking to people in the banking, like, you know, what are your properties? Talking to solicitors that do your properties. What's that look? What does that look like? Speaking to property developers. What does that look like?
Yeah.
What's going on? You know, what are the issues that are coming? Do you know anyone that might, you know, is this a need? And a lot of it was just conversation. And then when people kind of say, oh, actually, yeah, someone's asked me about that, but it's not a service that I know about. I'm like, oh yeah, we can do that. So a lot of it was just conversation. So I know there is a need, but you want to be sure that how much of a need is it? Where do I find these people?
Yes.
And so I started with the ones I thought would be a good place to start with. And sometimes someone then redirected something, or someone I thinking I wouldn't necessarily have connected the dot between from them to that client. But again, it's conversations. So tapping into my personal contact, professional contact, and just get the conversation going and, you know, being quite frank about the fact that, look, we can do a good service. We're just not sure exactly what that service looks like. But our aim here is to save people time and take away the hassle. And that translates well into the home concierge and a few other services that we're trying to sell now. And that's kind of how I started. So we're looking at banks, you know, how to add value. Everyone wants to stay relevant. You want to make sure that you leave a good taste in people's mouth at the end of this COVID. It's kind of been that positive voice, that person that comes with a solution that will take some stress off someone's shoulder.
Yeah,
and it's wording it that way as well as offering something that actually does save people's stress and time and
so so that's a very good point you make, because so I'm thinking of, I've had like a group, like, because obviously as part of COVID you're thinking of ways to pivot, you know, part of what I then developed was, a lot of people want to go into this business in some form or the other. Typically the idea leading up to it was that, oh, you had to have so much money, so much of a deposit.
Right, right.
But, you know, actually, if you want to be in the property space, you can be and earn income from it, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's
part of the conversation we're having. Now, one of the things that I did say was tapping into your network and letting them know what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not just your personal network, your professional network, people you've worked with before. You know, just try thinking about who is it that this service would benefit, but then taking that step forward to say, okay, how can I add value? How can I help you? You know, put it from their perspective. Like, and that's why I like what you said about kind of approaching them and saying, well, I'm not sure how that looks like right now, but I know that we can save you time, we can save you stress.
Yeah.
Let's work together and build something, right? So
Yeah. So and having conversations with people that are outside your industry sometimes shed some light, because sometimes you're too close to it. And you think you know what you're doing. And if someone says something that is so left field, they're thinking, why did I think about that? Yeah. So it's just been very intentional and speaking to different people and you know, maybe not talking to everybody, but you know, speaking to some people about
there's no problem with talking to everyone, because you just don't know.
Yeah, you don't know, but sometimes I think in the conversation was a total waste of time, but that's just me. I'm still learning how to deal with people.
Before, and in the end, the person actually ended up being valuable, not because of them per se, but because they then spread the word out to somebody
else. Yeah, there is, for sure.
So honestly, just that's why some people have that, you know, no hold bars approach. You just anybody that cares to listen.
So yeah, but we start again, starting from the benefit rather than the product is also very
always. That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've told the guys that I'm mentoring that you always focus on the service.
Yeah, yeah.
Help.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you know, how much it is, or you know. Oh gosh. Anyway. Sorry, I got a call coming.
That's fine. Busy, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
So, okay. So, there was something you mentioned that just blew my mind. And that was, so I'm just going to go into the question about what resources have helped you along the journey. Like,
right.
And one thing that you mentioned about what you encourage the people that you work with to do is the
book. Oh, yeah. Our book club. So first thing first, I have like two mentors.
Okay.
I can't even say they're favorite because they're also different. So one of my mentors, she's very, very business. She has a business acumen. Okay. So I've been wanting to do the book club for a while. And the other thing is most of my staff are all contractors. So we've always been virtual. We don't have an office. We had an office probably the first year, which is a waste of time, a waste of everything. So my team, apart from those that need to be based in the UK, the others are based between Vietnam, Serbia. Actually, yeah, Bulgaria, I forgot, yeah.
Okay. So you're really optimized to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some of them I've never seen face-to-face. It's always been via a screen. Skype and Teams. Anyways, so I've been wanting to do the book club, and I thought, well, they're contractors. Why would they want to do this? So when I was speaking to my mentor, she's like, look, the kind of people you want are those that are willing to invest in themselves. Mm-hmm. The kind of people that you want, the people that are going to constantly want to change and improve and be better. Yeah. And I thought, okay, right then. Okay, we're going to do this. What's going to happen? Some people just didn't want to work with poise. That means they're not really poise
material.
They're not
really good people.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's fine. You know, you've got your values. Now you need to find a way to live it every day. So what does that look like? We're having a book club, end of story. So we started doing this book club, and we would choose a variety of books. Okay. From business books to autobiographies to stuff that has to do with emotions, and some had to do with different things, communication. So our first book was Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. Oh my God, that was a good book.
Really? What's the name of the book?
Shoe Dog by Shoe Phil Dog. Knight. Okay. Yeah, by he started Nike.
Oh.
So everybody's responsible for buying their own books. Mm-hmm. Obviously I pay for the time for the review, so we have a review every 2 weeks.
Okay.
So we all agree to read, maybe depending on how big the book is, and you know, we read 4 chapters for every 4 weeks, and then we discuss it. What did you like?
Then discuss
exactly
how they found. So
So that was quite good, and it got us thinking, it got us inspired. Mm-hmm. It made us look at things differently. It made us realize we're not the only one going through certain things. Yeah. It made us realize that some people that seem to have it figured have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
but they've done it all the same, and that's how they found out what they were doing.
Yeah, what they were going to do.
So,
it was like they call it throwing spaghetti on the wall.
Something to stick. You know, some things you can't figure out until you jump in. So that kind of helped, and also build the team, because then we could talk about things that weren't necessarily just work. People, the team were more willing to, the environment created more of a family type environment. And people were learning, and we had books like Five Love Languages. And one of our values at POISE is that we're here to enrich life one extraordinary experience at a time, and that includes my staff as well as my
clients. So for your clients, that's interesting. So you have, what is your ethos for your clients? You want them to have an extraordinary time when they interact with your company.
Exactly.
But then you've also applied this to even your staff.
Exactly.
Living this same experience.
Yeah. I mean, you work 5 days a week, 45 weeks in a year, you better have something good to show back in 5 years time. You've got to be a better version of yourself. You've got to be an improvement. You're a living being. You need to change and become better. So that was the and if they're better for themselves, they'll be better at work as well. And if they left POISE, when I speak to them in a few years time, I want to know they're doing something more or fulfilling whatever they feel they're called to fulfill.
So we now understand sort of how the business works and how you access the market. Now, if somebody was interested in going down this route, say they've never heard of this concept before, they're like, oh, wow, concierge services company, I would like to be a part of this. What are the top three things you would say starting out, especially in this digital economy we have going on? What would you say? What would you say is a good startup point?
Oh my gosh!
It to you, right?
Oh yeah, I'm like, what would you do? The concierge. I mean, I think it's kind of, it's first of all figuring out your values, as in, because with the concierge you can get caught up. There's so many things you can do with concierge. You can. Stick to entertainment only. The industry is wide, from high net worth to mid range to low. You could, so you kind of have to figure out what benefits you want to bring. What do you want to be able to say we do?
Okay.
I think is probably what I would say, and I think that sounds vague, but I can't. I
understand what you mean. So it's almost like so what I call that is kind of your own your unique selling point, right?
In
What is that thing going to be that will make me stand out? Specific to the type of people that my clients, and then following from that, the guest experience you want them to have, which is what you said about the extraordinary. You want them to have an extraordinary time when they interact with you. So
I would say that, and if you are a solopreneur, I would say get a mentor.
Yeah.
And you don't have to stick to one or two or three. You can have, I have a mentor for business. I have one for just kind of managing my staff and managing people. And then just one to kind of bounce ideas with, because I wouldn't lie, when I first started, it was just extraordinarily lonely, because it's just you, yourself, and
just you, yourself, and your thoughts. And you're constantly bouncing your ideas back on the wall and back to yourself.
I would say definitely get a mentor, create your own support team of people. That even they don't have to necessarily be in the same industry. It's best, sometimes it's good to have someone in that industry. But if you can't, just get people that are that have been a mixture of those that have been in for a lot longer.
Yes. The walk, and they can help you
navigate, exactly.
I say like avoiding the mine, the minefields, because it's new, right? It's new
territory. Exactly.
We're a new business owner. So running the business is one thing, then identifying what's products or services,
yeah,
is another thing. So all of those different elements.
So definitely. So first kind of know what benefits, what do you really want to do? Why are you doing this? Because some days are going to be hard, and the money or the stress that comes with it, it's not going to be enough to want it to help. You're not going to want to get out of bed. So you kind of need to find something that this is what I want to be known for outside of the money, which will come if you're doing a good job. what exactly do you want to bring, have a mentor, have a support team. But I think the third thing I would say that has now helped me is taking time to think. People don't like taking time to think. I don't understand. I feel I'm so busy.
Yes, and I said pre-COVID, exactly. I'm just trying something, going here, running here, sorting out, firefighting, never sitting back to think. Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
Find a hobby and find time, you know. Yeah. Just
think time.
You need to think, because otherwise, if you don't take time to think, then you actually lose focus.
Yes.
But when you take time to think, you can, and when I mean think, you're gonna think about many things, and then you're gonna then narrow it down to one thing. But when you're constantly on the move, you don't have time to really explore the different options and then figure out what you want to do. And then you chat out a plan for it, and then you think again. I actually schedule Mondays normally as my think days, so I don't reply emails, I don't check, send emails, I try not to, you know, any work related.
Your business, like even when things are up and running.
Because when I have, obviously, with the team, at the end of the day, I'm not a heart surgeon. I'm not going to do a heart surgery. There's nothing that is that.
Nothing. That's not critical that they can't. Exactly. Well, you did mention that you don't work on the weekends. You have a policy.
I do know. I stopped working on the weekend like 10 years ago. I don't work on the weekend. Not that I don't. If I have to, it's because I have to. And I know I have to. It's not because, oh, I've got some spare time. Let me open my laptop and do some work. Hell no, I don't do that.
Yeah.
So, and now, no, I don't work on weekends.
Created your boundaries around your personal.
And as my faith with God, I figured if God took one day off, I would take 2 days off. was your excuse. And
I can take 2 days, I'll be all right.
Yeah. And then I thought, God, you got me into this. So I'm trusting you for this 2 days that it's going to be fine, you know. And then I had my team, although now we are much smaller. But again, there's certain things that are fairly simple. If there is any, and again, because I built it to not work weekends, I had to put in things in place that would ensure I didn't have to work weekends.
Okay. You
know, if I was ill, I didn't have to go to work, you know, sniffling or with a high temperature. So I then set things in place to ensure that I didn't have to work weekends. But if I had allowed myself to say, well, I can't work weekends, then I want to put things into place to ensure that I didn't have to work weekends. And my staff as well, I tell them, look, you can't work 7 days a week. It doesn't make any sense. We are enriching lives. You have to save clients stress. And we should do the same for each other. Because if you're coming to work angry or tired or cranky, you haven't slept, I can't really expect you to deliver 120%. It's not possible. I do not work weekends. Mondays are my think days. I take time to dream. I take time to run through all the ideas. I take time to just... And then, so I don't feel like I have to hit the ground running running and I don't know what direction I'm going. I realize having run for 30 minutes, I'm running the wrong direction in the first place. Yeah. Running full speed is not the issue. It's making sure I'm going the right direction.
Yes.
So
I heard a term about that where it was like, so strategy is more important than energy. So get your strategy first and then you can apply the energy to the strategy.
Exactly. I'll definitely say have a clear idea of what you want. And that might change. There's nothing that is set in stone, but at least if you know what you set it off with, you can potentially figure out where things might have gone wrong and how you've evolved, and that's fine. And having a support system and being intentional about having a support, it's not going to happen to you if you don't make it happen.
Yeah.
And I would say taking time, definitely just to have time to think and rest your mind. So that give yourself permission. I have to tell myself, I'm giving myself permission to think and rest and just, and if nothing happens that day, nothing happens, but at least my brain has had, as well as the 2 day Sabbath, you know, everyone's like, what's your obsession with Sabbath? I'm like, for those 2 days, I am due. I am, and it's 2 day Sabbath I have. Yeah. So then Mondays is just, keep writing, and I rewrite the same thing. And at the end of the day, I have clarity, and having my mentor has helped, because they will challenge my way of thinking. They will say, why are you thinking this way? Sometimes it's situational conversation where I say, I have something coming up. What do you think? And then they'll say something and I'm like, wow, this is, I didn't see this.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was such a big deal, but when they break it down, they're like, I can't see what the big issue is. Or,
yeah. So is that sounding board? Now, you have talked about them throughout kind of, as we've been going along, are they paid mentorship? Is it paid mentorship, or is it sort of just finding somebody that you get along with that, you know, can play that role?
None of them are paid. funny enough. And
The
first
steady time that you meet with them, like every
So with one of them is actually every week, every Wednesday. One of them is every other month, so it's not as steady. And then the third person is now, just recently, because it's got more time. So again, with him is every week, but before it used to be every other month.
Okay.
And the way I found them was I just asked my, the most recent ones, I actually figure out, I sat down, I thought, I need help. And I figured, what does that look like? So I need someone that has a minimum of 5 years experience, that has a team of X amount of people, that has done this and that and understands XYZ. And I sent out to everyone, not everyone, but almost everyone that I knew. And I said, I need help.
I need help. Okay, so that's a very good thought, because I'm learning from this, to be honest. So you have a problem in an area, you've identified an area you need growth or help.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to find somebody in that space already.
Yeah.
And then just approach a person and be like,
yeah. So there was one lady I want to approach. She wrote a book. I like the book. I figured worst case scenario, she said, I haven't got time. You know, like a book I read, the guy said, if you are on zero and you ask someone, they don't give you anything, you're still at zero. So you've not lost anything.
Yeah, you
so I read her book. She's got a team. She's run a team that is a very small team and it's a virtual team. And I figured I need someone that has that experience. So the challenges of running a virtual team. Mm-hmm. And I figured I would reach out to her, read her book first, then reach out to her on LinkedIn. She's in the US. And I thought, okay, worst case scenario, and I'll be trying to be as clear as I can get. So I read a book on mentoring, two books actually, to figure out, so what does that look like? What should I know? So, you know, so I'll reach out to her and say, and maybe it's just for a few sessions, one session, two sessions, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But at the very least, she's done it for a while with her husband who runs this business. And I thought, okay, they understand what it looks like, what that issue is. And I'll reach out and she might say, not interested, I haven't got the time, or not now. Or she might say, yeah, sure. You know, something I've been trying to figure out for weeks or months or years. Could we figure out just like
that? Yeah, just like that. Yeah. So I guess that nicely brings us to, so what plans do you have for your business? Since you're thinking on a Monday, you definitely have where you want to take your business to, the direction and all of that.
So one of the things we're trying to do right now is to really push in the corporate accounts and bring in a membership side of things. So the home concierge is like a membership. So building up on that and, you know, having like different tiers. So right now it's just the two tiers, which is for those that are in the UK, that already are in the UK. And right now that is not relevant because everyone's at home.
Yes.
And the second one is those that have properties in the UK and just need, so building up on that, because that way we can add value. So it's a bit like having a contract with the
So just like a steady, I've seen some things come through where it'll kind of be like a set, but or as you said, different sort of
different
pricing.
And you can always, you know, for lack of a better word, bolt on other things for a short period or for a long period or whatever, and that helps. But it's really creating a more steady income in that area of home concierge, but also working with more corporate accounts.
Okay.
Because that turns out one of our big clients was an American client that had properties here, and that's, they were the ones that we used to look after their homes as well as their clients, because they didn't have a base here.
They have their homes and the clients when they come, because they need the hand holding.
Exactly. So we're trying to find, that's slightly changed now. It's trying to figure out what has changed, how it has changed. And because we've worked with some of them for a few years, 3, 4, 5 years, it's like, okay, having a sit down with them again, conversation. So building up on the membership, because for us now it's so much more important to have steady income and then build up on those other services that might bring a high revenue, but they might not be as consistent. Because I find that it's hard to build a business on those inconsistent. Yeah. While they bring in the big income, it's so inconsistent that
you can't scale, you can't plan. Yeah. So I call that sort of income stream the incidental income stream. It's like, you know, it comes, it's a nice big, you know, like a big balloon payment or whatever it is, but it's not something you can necessarily plan on because you don't know when going to happen.
Exactly.
But always nice, they're kind of like the profit add-ons. It's like, you know, you're gonna earn this much this year from your steady, boring, not that much margin
business. Yeah.
You
yeah.
have these extra income streams that just kind of bolt on and bring in, yeah. you know.
Yeah, so with the membership, it would help us, like I said, with different levels. We might actually find that we can make more. And then it's easier, again, as to grow the business. Like I said, scaling up is really difficult when you don't know if, you know, you can afford to have X, Y. So this will allow us to pay bums on seats, allow us to grow the business and grow ourselves. Because I feel all the other things you add is not as important as the people. I think those are the key resources. In the business. So having time for us to have the book club, for us to have a training, for us to have time to think as well. Yeah. So I want to build in that thinking time for my staff as well, where it's paid to think. Like, seriously, you're off the phone, off the emails, just go and think.
Let's think.
Yeah, you know, just because you don't have time. If you're constantly going, I don't think you'll have time to figure out, why am I always behind? Why am I not doing this well at work? And then next thing you have an appraisal and it's constantly doing something. You're constantly in motion. So that's one thing. Build up that cash flow with a good, healthy cash flow with this kind of a retainership with corporates and individuals. Yeah. And then, you know, create a strong, productive, effective team is what I would like and we're working towards.
Timmy, it's been so insightful hearing from you, and just, you know, especially me that I'm in business as well, it's just trying to, you know, pick up some of the good pro tips that you have. And of course, you're a Black woman, so I have to ask the question about your experiences in, you know, as a Black person running your business, especially when it's not like your home country or anything like that. How have you managed? Because of everything that we're going on in the world today, I guess it's not a question I normally would have asked, but I think it's good that we're needing to have these questions, you know, have these thoughts and think about how we've coped up to now and how we can kind of chart the, you know, for the future. So.
Sure. Yeah. Let me think about that. I've always asked, oh, you know, as a woman, do you find it difficult? Not really. I've not had it found it difficult as a woman. As a Black woman, again, I'm one of those people that have tunnel vision, as in what you think, I'm not sure why that is important to me, kind of how does actually the price of fish in the market, the sun doesn't set. I mean, so I figured if it's always easier if I know you feel that way, then I can just not work with you and just move on. Yes. I figure there are 7 billion people on this earth. Even if I only had 1%, that's too many anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
So again, maybe not. And then I'm quite tall. And apparently, people say I'm intimidating sometimes. I don't know what that means. So I walk into a room and I think I own this place.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of helps me, even when I'm shaking in my boots. And also because my industry is quite intimidating. When I started, you go into an event and, you know, then it's just been working. I just got, you know, laid off. So yeah, fair enough. I thought to myself, oh my God, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know what these people are talking about. And they would say certain things and then go to some events, luxury events, and they would mention a particular, you know, a concert. And have you seen this? I'm thinking, never ever heard about it. So eventually I kind of had control of myself and I thought, you know what, Timmy, you have no clue what they're talking about. Just tell them you don't have a clue. So actually, no, I don't. Tell me about it. No. So I kind of thought, I don't know it. I'm not going to know everything. There's no way I'm going to know everything. Firstly, I don't even want to know everything anyways. So it's fine. If you knew everything, then what are you going to talk about? So I went in. I don't really... Did I struggle? No.
You haven't really. So I guess because, like we were saying, different people have different experiences. And, you know, there are some experiences people have that they've been traumatized by. So that they're more sensitive to, you know, these things that we just shrug off and like, well, actually, just move on, you know. And
I would probably say my dad did a good job with me growing up. And that made me realize that at the end of the day, people have opinions. Okay, how does that really change anything? I've not been in a position where somebody could actually, because every some people have had situations where it wasn't just opinions, but this person became an obstacle.
Yes.
I've not had that experience, luckily. Maybe I did, I didn't notice. Because again, I have tunnel vision and I'm just like plowing through. So my dad always told me, dare to be different. And about, you know, no, not everyone's going to like you, and it's fine. You're not going to like everybody yourself anyway, so it's fine. So if someone doesn't like you, sometimes you don't like someone, so, you know, it's nothing personal, that's fine. And I think my faith as well has also helped me a lot, where it's like, you know what, God, you've got my back. I have no reason to be afraid. And it's something that I have to talk myself into sometimes. And not even because of the black woman stuff. It's just going in, not knowing anything, and not wanting to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, and not wanting to sound stupid, really. A lot of it was just insecurities that I had to work my way out of.
Is what you would experience as a new business owner, because you're seeing new territory, so you don't have that confidence stride, you know.
To be honest, even as a business owner, there's always going to be someone that has been in it for ages or years. There is always going to be a group that you're in that you have no idea what you're talking about, or someone that is bigger. You know, you go into a room and somebody else has got 20 years experience, you've got 15 years experience, or somebody else brings a revenue of, I don't know, 5 million and you've got 2.5. You know, so it's always going to be something. So rather than chasing that, or who's the bigger fish here, I know my worth. We all worth something. You know, let's just do this. And some people you get along with, some you don't get along with, and that's fine. I can't get along with everyone, I know, not because I'm amazing or anything, but we all have different values, different taste, different way of talking.
So I think the one step, and I think that's how I got involved in wanting to at least talk about it a bit more, because I'm quite happy to kind of just be carrying on and in my own world, right? But at some point you have to realize that there's some things that are systemic, right?
True.
And they just, we kind of live with them, and we've taken them for granted that, well, you know, we're in a different country, and, you know, and you can imagine the people that actually lived and grew up in this country that have had to overcome and try to, you know, change their mindsets about, you know, what they can achieve. You know, you said your dad, you know, he pumped into you, and a lot of us that grew up in Africa or in Nigeria or wherever we're coming from, we had that confidence instilled in us because we were the majority, right?
Yeah.
We never have to deal with some of these things growing
up. Not necessarily. I mean, there were some stuff, and because telling you earlier, I spent time to educate myself, and when I talk about that systemic thing, sometimes it's not even obvious and it's not even intended.
Yes.
A while back, like, I don't know, when I was in uni, I started to do my hair natural. So sometimes you want to go into a networking event and you're thinking, okay, so should we let the natural hair out or not? So some of them were more subtle, and it's not like anyone's told you. And maybe it's the media, maybe it's exposure. So you've kind of decided that this is the appropriate way to dress up, or this is the appropriate, like, you know, sometimes I'll go on Instagram and I'll see this outfit, all African fabric. And, you know, you don't necessarily then translate that and wear that to a networking event. Because I think, you know, that's too African.
That's a bit too African,
So I would say some of it was more subtle, and not necessarily, it was more like the social construct that you've built. What you've seen in the media, maybe. So as a black woman, it's kind of just owning the fact that, you know what, my hair looks different from yours, and that's fine, you know. Having to tap into this, dare to be different. You know, you don't want to look for anybody else. So, hey. Own it. You know, so sometimes I will do on a deal, like I'm taking my hair out that way, like
let them stare.
And you know, that means they'll remember me anyway. So when I'm here,
ironically, that's why they'll remember you, because girl with the hair. Because you know.
So I had my stuff my dad had got for me from Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, and you know, the bracelet were like those big, nice African bracelet. And then I thought, you know what? No, I'm wearing this. But when I sit up and I introduce my business, they will definitely remember me. So I think that's probably the only influence or maybe issues that I've had. Maybe like my accent, I might say, oh, the person doesn't understand me, because also I have a French background. So there are some words that I struggle with. I don't hear the difference between ship and ship, and I'm like, look, mate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's certain things I say, and I'm like, they probably won't understand what I'm saying, but that's fine. The same way,
Colombian they'll friend. Understand in context.
You know, exactly.
When I'm talking about shipping, so.
You know, so I thought to myself, you know, in the same way, I have a friend that's from Wolverhampton, a friend of Colombia, something. I'm thinking, what the heck? The accent's so different. But again, like I said, context. Yeah. So owned it, the fact that I do have an accent, and that's fine. I don't see my Colombian friend trying to, you know,
westernize.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and the Scottish guy speaking, and yeah, you will figure him out. Yeah. So I just had to own it. So sometimes it wasn't as much somebody telling me something, but kind of preconceived ideas of what appropriate was in this setup.
Yeah.
Your hair has to be nice and straight. You know, don't wear something that is quote unquote too African, and try and speak with an accent. So I've been working on my diction as opposed to my accent. Yeah. Like, just learn how to speak properly. As opposed to speaking in a particular accent. And it's hard because you kind of end up mimicking when you're somewhere. Find yourself bringing out your British accent because, oh, you're all British. So you need to
speak. Oh, yes.
But again, if that's what it is, that's what it is. Where as humans, you mimic because that's just kind of like survival.
It is. And I remember one of my cousins is really, like, she grew up here, so she's really British, like, she's, like, you know, really well, you know, well-spoken British. And my sister and I went to dinner with her once, and my sister was like, why were you putting on the fake accent throughout that conversation? It was annoying me. And I was like, I didn't know I was doing it. Because you're mimicking. It's like, she talks like that, and then you find yourself, and she's like, why are you talking like this?
Yeah. It's the same way I'm talking to my kids. I speak in a different way, not different way, but you kind of not you, you. It's just a natural way. You're friend with friends, and you probably don't say big words speaking to your 5 year old.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, speaking to my friends from Nigeria, suddenly the Nigerian accent is the strongest it's ever been. Speaking to my French, you know, so it's like you just. So yeah. I think as long as I know that I'm happy with it, I'm not trying to prove anything to anyone. Mm-hmm. Being self-aware, the fact that sometimes if I'm feeling insecure about doing certain things, so when you asked me to do this podcast, I was thinking, oh my god, no one's going to understand anything I'm saying.
No, we do.
But I thought, you know what, whatever.
Hopefully, why not? You have something to say. Please, I'm just speaking with you for sure.
Yeah, so just kind of be aware of it, and don't let that get to you. Everyone has a handicap, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It could be height, it could be background, it could be experience, it could be your special, you know, self insecurity, it could be the distance from your house, your work. I mean, we all have something that you know, rich or poor, there is something. Yeah. We all have a handicap, different degrees, obviously.
Yes.
So
you know, Malcolm Gladwell, like his book Outliers. Oh god.
I haven't read that one though.
Outliers is amazing, especially when he talks about what you just mentioned with, you know, the handicap.
Oh, really?
Actually, some people have that. There's one guy in particular, the story was really, really good, where he's a lawyer. He's like the top, I think it was like a litigation lawyer, commercial litigation, and he was the top in New York. And the reason why is because he had dyslexia when he was young.
Wow.
But what had happened was, because he had to overcome that, he got very used to, when he was young, retaining information that was spoken.
Oh, wow.
And the one thing that you need as a litigation lawyer when you're cross-examining people is the ability to remember what they said and then challenge them on it. So he just used to reel through where other people are kind of going through their notes, or whether he had everything retained. But that was the handicap that he had when he was younger, that he had over the years. And that's what he was saying, that over the years he had now become skilled at harnessing that handicap and using it to overcome whatever he had to. And see, so it's like the handicap can really become...
Yeah, a handicap, depending on how you build it.
Yeah.
It could be your weakness or your strength. Yeah. You allow it to be your weakness or your strength. And knowing that you have that handicap also means you get the right kind of partnerships.
Yes. Thank you. Very well done. Where you now know that, well, I'm this area I need help in. So like, for instance, I know I'm just terrible at admin. So getting people on my team that are very strong and know how to really take on the process. I'm the visionary. I can do all of that, but...
Yeah, everybody has a role to play. You don't see the spoon wanting to be the knife. You know, everyone has a role to play. You know, you might be able to do it for a bit, but that's not what you're designed to do. Yeah. Only it doesn't make you any less smart. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you anything. It just means Like I tell my mom, like, if you want a cat, you get a cat. If you want a dog, you get a dog. If you want a cat to get rid of the mouse, you get a cat. You don't get a dog and ask the dog to get rid of the mouse. So, you know, hey, you know, so the cat saying, oh, I wish I could bark like a dog. So.
Owns being a cat. They don't even
bark. Exactly. Just own it. So, yeah. So for me, it was really, and then it just being self-aware. So I guess having this whole black thing, kind of sitting down and thinking, how has me, have affected me, knowingly or unknowingly, are there social constructs I've built through media, what people have said or even done that I've now taken up, and that's the way I should do things, or why should I do so, questioning certain things, but also being educated so that I am more empathetic or sympathetic to those that are going through things. I'm not just saying they are, you know, making it up, or it's not a big deal. So sometimes being very, oh, that I've never experienced that, you might think it's not a big deal, but it might make someone just feel like, what does she mean? He's trying to say I'm making this up. So being more sensitive is not just saying the right things, it's that kind of even being aware of how you express your own experience. Everyone has a different lived experience. My lived experience, I can't say I've experienced it, but somebody else has, and being willing to hear, open, and understand as much as one can understand without having gone through it themselves.
Yeah,
that's what I'm learning and educating myself intentionally, and not just waiting for someone to come and tell me about it. It's probably what I've been doing, Shelley, since all of us, let's just say the word George Floyd, so the name, just kind of, yeah, being sensitive, educating myself, and
okay,
trying to understand as much as I can, I suppose.
Yeah, so thank you, Timmy, it's been really good. We've approached the hour, if you can. But it's so easy to talk to you. Thank you. And I guess any parting words before we kind of sign off?
I think be kind. We should need to be kind to ourselves.
Mm.
The fact that we get up and do this every day is brave. The fact that you screw up or you make a mistake is an incident, not an identity. So nobody should ever say I'm a failure. Say I've screwed up, I fail. That's fine. You're still going to fail. Get over it. And just keep plowing through is one thing I've learned. So people that are successful are those that didn't give up.
Yeah, for sure. Fall down, but you get up again.
Exactly. So yeah. That's what I would say.
Conversation. So anyway, I wish you all the best with Poised Concierge.
Thank you very much.
We look forward to hearing bigger and better things about.
I sure hope so. Thank you so much for inviting me, and yeah, you have yourself a lovely week ahead.
You too. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
For me, that was a really interesting conversation we had. One of the things I wanted to pull out was in terms of her running her business, is the way she built a camaraderie around the people that she hires. So the way she's come up with this concept of a book club to create and foster that ongoing team building, team spirit. I thought that was amazing. And I really, you know, even for me, that was a great take home as to how you can build a rapport and build a relationship with your team so that they're just not working for you. They're working with you. They're working alongside with you. So for me, that was one of the key things that I pulled out, in addition to all the other tips that she gave. So hope you got good value. And next, we are going to be covering a very interesting topic with a lady called Stephanie Taylor. Now, Stephanie Taylor is a really interesting individual, and she'll go into her story as well of how she built her own business, which is a rent-to-rent HMO business called HMO Heaven. So that's going to be our next guest, and so do look forward to that. And until then, stay safe, build assets, and let's make an impact.